If you've been told to pull your socks up recently, then make sure it's a pair of RCR socks. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Up Your Brave show on Reality Check Radio. I am so thrilled to have a returning guest, Tim Bean, back on the show today. Last time we talked about the hard edge of health, and today we're talking about the truth about health, weight, height, muscles, and more. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be back again. Hello, folks.
So good to have you on. I know everybody loved your interview last year back in 2023, so I've got you back again. For those of you that don't know Tim, he is an executive longevity specialist, but has been known in London's social circles as the merciless Mr. Bean. With over 30 years at the top end of the international health and wellness industry, he has worked with celebrities and social high flyers as his corporate clients, included seven of the world's 10 biggest investment banks. Corporate speaker, TV presenter, and radio host, he's also written several books, the latest of which is The Wealthy Body in Business, and that has been released worldwide. He currently is based in Timaru, where he lives with Anne, and he owns the club Performance Health Club. Today, he has joined us to share a little bit about his journey and specifically some truths about weight, height, muscles, and more. So good to have you on the show, Tim. I would love to hear, how has the last year been, you know, since we had you on the show? What is new? What is going on? What can you share with us?
Well, things have gone from strength to strength. Last time we spoke, we were still pretty much coming out of the whole COVID nonsense. And we've found that our health club has really started to blossom in the meantime. More of the message is getting out and people have realized how much they need to invest in their physical health. And I think last time we touched on there's four levels of health where people can explore and achieve their human capacity. The first and most foundational one, I think, is their physical health, which revolves around four legs of a stool, if you like, of exercise, intelligent nutrition, tactical rest and recovery strategies, and paying attention to your internal biomarkers. And until you get that foundation right, you really don't have a strong base to build your emotional health and emotional capacity, your mental health and mental capacity, and therefore achieving your spiritual health or your raison d'etre or the why you exist, why you are who you are and what you want to achieve in life. Because if you don't have robust and strong physical health, you don't have, the greatest minds in the world will go nowhere if they don't have a body to take them. And so that message has been continued to be broadcast and people are coming to the realization this is something they need to invest in, particularly if they haven't been particularly physically active. A lot of times people working from home tend to be a lot more sedentary than they were when they were working in the office, yeah, having to commute every day and climbing up and down stairs and all those sorts of things. So the club has continued to grow and prosper, and the membership's increasing, both young people and older people coming through. So that's been a big challenge to keep up with. So we're still developing the club, investing in more equipment going in there all the time. And that's been really exciting to see happen, and very exciting to be engaging with the people coming in and being able to help them out. So that's been pretty all-consuming, I have to say.
I like that analogy. I think you said stool, not chair. Was it? I like the analogy of the stool.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. With the three legs. And one that you mentioned that I just want to dive into is you talked about tactical R&R, which is rest, yes, and relaxation, I think, strategies. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Tactical rest and recovery strategies is about being thoughtful and mindful of how much sleep you get, when you get that sleep, and what rest and de-stressing strategies you build into your day. Whether that's through exercise, relaxation techniques, breathing techniques, mental focus techniques during the day. But the sleep thing is a huge component. If you're not sleeping very well and you're not reaching that deep delta wave sleep that where your main recovery occurs, then you are going to wake up in the morning more tired than you went to bed. You will be fatigued and that will wind you down. And then all will happen is you'll spend the weekend trying to recover from the week before the next week comes around. And that's not what life is about.
Yeah.
So getting in charge of that is a key thing. But of course, it's like a web. They are all interconnected. You can't just say, well, this is what I'm going to focus on if your exercise regime has been neglected, or if your nutrition is out of order, or you've not paid no attention to your biomarkers, things like, you know, your blood pressure, looking at the chemical balances in your body. Everything has to be kind of done all at once or addressed at the same level. And that's where, despite what most people have said and conversations have gone, I've become a big fan of this whole diversity, equity, and inclusion thing in that we need a diet that is very diverse. We need an exercise regime that is diverse. There needs to be some equity in what we include in that, so all components are addressed with equal value and regarded with equal value and respect. And inclusion. So we're including a wide variety of exercises. We're including vitamins, nutrients, minerals, supplementation, those sorts of things to fill in the gaps so we have as a complete regime as possible that we're investing in our physical health.
Yeah, and I know you do a lot of work. Well, I know you do work speaking from stages, but I know you also go into companies and work with the top leaders. Mm-hmm. Have you found, you know, without breaking in confidentiality, but have you found that employees, you know, the staff environment, people are having higher levels of, you know, mental health issues, and is really the first starting point is to get the three legs of that stool in place?
Yes, and yes, we have noticed particularly most of the employees we deal with are senior level, so their management level and executive level. The stress seems to be a lot more than it ever has been. There seems to be businesses are struggling. The margins are very tight. The market is very competitive. There is a lot of competition for talent. So people being poached from one company to another.
Right.
So it's a very stressful environment, and people are doing their best, but to be honest, they're not coping very well. The ones who are in better shape are handling it much better. The ones who are not are also torn between their obligations to family and to home. And some of them are now moving from home back into the office. A lot of their employees are moving back into the office. And some people we're hearing have lost the ability to integrate into an office environment where there are other people, other characters, other personalities. The environment is more fluid and are finding harder to integrate with other people and other personalities, shall we say. So there's more arguments, fights, stress, and those sorts of things in the workplace, accusations of bullying, all sorts of things going on. But again, when we look at that, there still hasn't been a lot of movement forward in workplaces adopting a healthy workplace policy. And I still cannot understand this, because if you have no agenda, I mean, we have a health and safety policy, and we've discussed this before, NASA, you know, people tend to bundle it together, but it's all about safety. And this is what we saw in the last pandemic as well.
Yeah.
The whole conversation was about safety, keeping people safe and all this sort of thing. Whereas we've changed that to health, I think we would have preempted a lot of the problems that we are faced with today. And in the workplace, it's the same. If we started saying we're going to make this workplace as healthy as possible, then the way that we frame our conversations in the workplace, the environment that we create in the workplace, the information that's available in the workplace would start to get people thinking a little more carefully about their nutrition, about the movement habits that they have and the exercise that they're getting. And employers, I think, would have a much easier time of managing the workplace environment if they put this in place. I don't understand why they don't do it, because it would make their job so much easier, I'm sure.
It's a different energy. It's a different destination, saying
totally.
That we have a safety policy versus a health, you know, that health focus, that everything circles around the health, and safety can come into that, but it's a different energy.
Absolutely. It's a very positive, and it's a very deep investment in the employees at every level, whether it's management, whether it's the rank and file, the cleaner that's coming in. If everybody's exposed to those messages and they are empowered to take action in that regard, that's great. And one thing that I've said to some businesses, you know, they have a cafeteria and they say, yes, well, we have healthy choices. Yes, but you have two healthy choices and 15 really unhealthy choices. That's not a healthy environment. You know, your workplace is got to be healthy or it's not healthy. There's no middle ground. And so what you should be saying is, by default, we supply healthy food, healthy choices. And if you want to bring in rubbish and eat that or go off site and do that, it's up to you. It's your time. It's your lunch break. You can do what you like. But as a business, this is what we, this is the path that we are following.
Well, I think it's making it easy, you know, taking the barriers away. So rather than having two options, it may, and also looking at the pricing of the healthy options as well.
Well, exactly. And that's a choice an organization could make by subsidizing healthy food. I think the investment that that would create in terms of healthy energy that's in the workplace, productivity in the workplace, allowing people to have time to exercise. You know, even we've heard of companies said, well, you know what, we're going to put changing rooms and showers in there for people who want to cycle to work so that they can cycle and they've got somewhere to keep their clothes, somewhere to have a shower so they come to the workplace fresh, but they're still getting that exercise. Many businesses we work with, you mentioned we work with some of the biggest investment banks in the world. It was regarded as a failing if you left your desk. Mm-hmm. So food, lunch, drinks, everything was delivered to your desk. And if you left your desk, it's like, you know, are you some sort of lightweight? You're abandoning ship here? What do you? And we need to be able to set an environment where it's okay to take that time out to exercise. It's okay to go and have something nutritious to eat, to you know, use the work Vitamix blender to mix up some a vegetable smoothie if you want to do that or whatever it is. And on that note, I have to say, and I heard this recently, somebody else, another expert was commenting about, we talk about workplaces providing healthy food. Recently, we've had a lot to do with some of our members who have been quite seriously ill and hospitalized. And we've gone to visit them in the hospital, and I'm absolutely appalled at the level of nutrition supplied in a hospital.
Mm.
This is a place where people are recovering from the most serious illnesses and serious diseases. You would think there would be an agenda to provide them with the natural resources that they can start rebuilding and resetting, for example, their gut biome, but putting the right amount of protein, vitamins, nutrients, minerals into their system to enable a better recovery. And yet this is totally absent. And in fact, what we have is food provided by the lowest bidder. That's basically it. And there's no sort of investment in saying, you know, we need, our nutrition needs to be very specific for the people who are in here.
It's such a basic thing. You would think that hospitals would have that as a in alignment with their values and their intention. But over the past 4 years, a lot of us now question some of the intentions and the values, in fact. But it seems like such a simple thing to do. I know it has a price tag, but everything does.
Well, I would have thought we would look to something like a hospital as a facility to lead the charge on that, from which employers and workplaces could look to and say, well, they're doing it this way. They're the hospital. They are looking after health. Maybe this is the path we should follow. Well, I'm sure if workplaces did that, their food would get worse, not better.
Well, I'm an optimist. I'd like to see a massive transformation in the healthcare system in general, as well as the food that's there. You mentioned it was hard for some people going back to work as such, back into the office spaces and places, and some people are really struggling. Do you have any guidance for someone, maybe someone that's listening that thinks, yeah, I actually have found it so hard going back into the office after having that freedom, or maybe just not being surrounded by so many people? What kind of words of wisdom or health strategies can they take on board?
There are so many, to be fair, whether we're talking about, you know, exercise things, you know, how to organize the nutrition for the workplace. We're at home, you've got a fridge full and you've had meals and there's leftovers and there's, you know, that's pretty well catered for. Now at the workplace, you're alone. You've got to figure, okay, well, what do I have for morning tea? What do I have for lunch? I have to go back to the whole mindset of preparing meals, packaging meals, bringing them in or whatever it is. And that's a key, because that's going to supply you with the energy that you need during the day. That's, you know, food is fuel and that's what you need. So we need to get back into the mindset and the habit of doing that effectively as well. With exercise, a great many people that come to our club are doing their workouts either on the way to work or on the way from work. And when people were working from home, they were largely exercising from home as well. And a lot of people were not doing strength-based or weight-bearing or muscle-loading exercise. And we have seen people coming back to the gym who have lost a lot of physical condition, lost a lot of strength because their muscle has atrophied through the inactivity of just being around the home environment. And some of them are getting out cycling and running and walking the dog and those sorts of things, which is has a small component of strength, a larger component of fitness, but it's the strength that they're lacking. And strength is probably the most important, because muscle, if we regard muscle as an organ of the body, is the organ of longevity. Strong people stay young. And we were very clear on this message last time we spoke. And that has done nothing but get stronger.
Right. Strong people stay young. Muscle is the something of longevity.
Muscle is the organ of longevity.
Okay.
And I'm talking about skeletal muscle. But of course, you know, cardiac muscle, it's your heart. You know, if your heart starts failing, that's serious. But smooth muscle in terms of your blood vessels and arteries is a smooth muscle, but also digestive system. Small and large intestine is smooth muscle. And so all of that needs to be taken care of. But here I'm talking specifically about skeletal muscle. And it's called skeletal muscle because skeletal muscle attaches to skeleton, attaches to bone. And one of the key issues is when you start stressing muscle, you change its nature. So instead of being very passive, and it may even be a little bit catabolic, so every year we know people lose muscle mass and muscle strength every year as they age. In fact, I've got a figure here. Between the ages of 20 and 40, the average woman loses 4 kilos of muscle and gains 10 kilos of fat. And between the ages of 20 and 80, the average male loses nearly half his total muscle mass. That's from the Tufts University Center of Aging. So it's some pretty serious research behind that. And we know this is the case. You know, we know that frailty is regarded as one of the symptoms of aging badly. And so this element of skeletal muscle is vitally important to maintain your youth, to maintain your mobility, to maintain your metabolism, to maintain good hormonal balance, to maintain strength and agility, to maintain good posture even. And the reason I really focus on this is it seems to be the one element of fitness that is largely neglected. And so I think it's something that needs to be brought to the fore and brought up, as I said, with equity. It's as one of the key elements, and we need to regard it with the same level of attention and respect as other elements of fitness.
You're right, because we think about rest, like you said before, sleep, and we think about nutrition, but not so much about the muscle side of things. Okay, there's a few other truths. That's a good truth to know. There's a few other truths I want to dive into. And one of them is about weight. And you mentioned to me before, something you mentioned to me before this interview, why being the same weight in your 60s as you were in your 30s is not necessarily something to be proud of.
Exactly. Now, that takes a little bit of getting your head around. Have I asked you before what sort of car you drive, Natalie?
Well, yeah, no, you haven't. It's a VW Charan. Think people mover. Think.
No. Oh, I know. Yes.
Like moderately old family car.
Why did you choose that instead of like a sports car, for example?
Right. Because I want to fit as many teenagers as I can and the dog in there.
And does it have conventional doors or are they sliding doors?
Sliding doors. So the kids don't, you know, smash into people in the parking lot.
And does that have automatic doors? Like you can push a button and the doors automatically close? It does?
Button.
Okay. How big is the engine? Do you know? What size is it? Is it a diesel? Is it a petrol?
It's a petrol. How big is it? I don't know.
Do you know how much it weighs?
No.
Why not? Why don't you know?
I felt like I was walking into a trap. No, it's all good.
You were. And I've got you.
Do you mean how much my car weighs?
Yeah, people don't know how much their car weighs. But and having said that, there will be loads of listeners who will know exactly what their car weighs and what the horsepower output
is. Yes, they will.
But most people don't. Why? Because it's not important. Who cares what your car weighs as long as it does what you want it to do? And your body is the same. You know, why are people so obsessed with their weight when that's not? When we ask them and really drill down, that actually is the least important thing about their bodies. What they're interested in is their energy, is their shape, is their body composition, is their ability to move around. Do they have, you know, hip pain, back pain, shoulder pain? All of these things that are part of a functional or dysfunctional physique, those are the important things. Mm-hmm. Weight is simply a measurement that reflects the pressure that gravity pushes you down onto the ground. It doesn't mean that much, to be fair. And in my fat days, and I used to be really quite fat, I was 122 kilos at one stage. And I went and signed up to a diet, a weight loss organization. And every week you had to go for a weigh-in. And if you lost a kilo, they rang a little bell and you got a little round of applause that you had lost a kilo of weight.
Wow.
And I was the only guy there. There's about 15 women that would go there. And I was appalled at the things that we got. People were in the middle of winter, it'd be like -2, freezing outside, howling southerly. People would turn up in a little summer dress and flip-flops to get weighed in because, you know, that's how light they would be. They would take off their jewelry, they, you know, even to the extent, I'm sure, they'd just, you know, take their teeth out, really severe manicures, you know, whatever it would be to weigh that little bit less. And that's really what started making me question, what is it with this weight thing when health is much more important? The function of your body is much more important. Now, weight is a marker. It's definitely a marker because if we're looking at body composition, how much muscle you have, how much fat you have, how much cellular hydration you're carrying, all those sorts of things. We need to know what the weight is in order to calculate how many kilos of fat you have now versus 6 weeks ago. Have you lost any or not? You know, that's what we need to know. Have you gained muscle or not? So it is an important marker, but it is not the marker. And the thing is, we talk to people in their 50s and 60s, as well as a lot younger, and they say, well, I should be fine because I weigh exactly the same as I did when I was 25.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at them and saying, yes, but are you saying your body hasn't changed? Oh, no, it's changed, but I weigh the same. I weigh the same as I did when I was 25. Well, if you're saying that, there's something seriously wrong because we know that people lose quite a significant percentage, 10% of their muscle mass every year after the age of 35, 40.
Mm.
So if you have lost that many kilos of muscle condition, muscle tone, muscle volume, muscle mass, and strength, and your weight is the same, what is replacing? Oh, okay. So you've got weaker and you've got fatter. So being the same weight isn't something necessarily to be proud of. Unless, of course, you've been, you know, following an intensive exercise regime and diet and you're in better shape than you were when you were 25. Well,
which for some people might be the case. But
and it is. You know, we see people like that. And coming back from 18 years in the UK, we noticed very quickly, I should say, the difference between people who had been maintaining that regime and people who had not. We would recognize some people in the street straight away and just go, Jeff, Brian, Sally, you look great. This is, you know, we'd know them straight away. Other people would come up, hi, Tim, how are you doing? And I kind of recognized them, but I thought, geez, you've got out of shape. You know, they're just stooped and poor gait. They were unable to walk. They were shuffling. They put on a lot of weight and they just looked old, older than the 18 years since we saw them last.
Mm.
And it's such a dramatic difference. And they may necessarily have weighed the same. You know, some people are still the same size as they were when they were 25. But again, that's not necessarily a great thing because if you, for example, take a cross section of your thigh muscle, and let's make this particular example relevant to women, for example. If you were to take a cross section of your thigh size and it's roughly the same as it was when you were in your 20s, say when you got married, is the tone and texture still the same? If you haven't been exercising, for sure we know you've lost some muscle mass. And in that case, the tone will not be there that was there previously. So even though you're the same size, the composition has changed dramatically, and some of that mass, some of that volume would have been replaced with fat. Why do we know this? Well, the simple thing is that muscle is the metabolic engine of the body. We know that 60 to 80% of all the calories you do burn in a working day are burned by muscle. Even when you're resting, muscle is burning calories. And so in that regard, well, and that's what maintains your core body temperature. Most of the heat that's generated as part of your core body temperature is burnt by active muscle. If you become immobile and you do not move, your core body temperature drops, for example, when you go to sleep at night. You're not moving, there's no heat generated by the muscle, and so the core body temperature drops. When you're exercising more, we know you heat up. So in your gym, you're doing a workout, you start getting hot, you sweat, and so forth. So this is the metabolic effect of muscle. If you are losing muscle, and you're going through a process that we know as called sarcopenia, sarco meaning flesh, and penia meaning loss of. So this is a loss of muscle mass as you gain. Your metabolic capacity also drops with it. And this is how it happens. This is why people who are maybe exercising exactly the same, eating exactly the same as they age, but their body composition changes and they find it much harder to move fat off or to maintain the body composition that they had when they were younger. Because if your muscle is reducing or diminishing, you're not burning the same number of calories. You're probably not engaging the same level of activity because you won't have the strength with which to do that. Therefore, you will, if the diet is the same, you will end up with a surplus of calories. The surplus of calories will be turned into fat, which will be put into storage. So as we lose muscle, we get fatter. It tends to be a pretty inevitable thing. And as we get more immobile and more sedentary, this problem gets worse and worse and worse. And it's not just fat that you find on your thigh. It's also internal body fat that starts putting pressure on the organs, up against the diaphragm, packed around the heart, all those kinds of things. I had a conversation with a surgeon very recently who specializes, if you call it that, in bowel operations. So for men particularly who have bowel cancer and removing sections of bowel that are infected and so forth. And he said when he's operating, if a gentleman has a massive belly, and so, sometimes you'll know this physique, right? You'll see it at the beach, you'll see a guy from behind, yeah, and he's like straight back, maybe a little bum, skinny legs. They turn around and there's boom, this big, huge bubble belly out the front. When they cut through that, cut through the muscle, there's it's almost as if the insides are trying to explode into the room with the pressure that's in there. But the greater danger is with all the fat packed in around the organs, it makes it extremely difficult to navigate through to the area they need to work on because a lot of the major blood vessels, arteries, and so forth have shifted, moved, excuse me, or have been hidden by this extra fat. And so that they're saying that these operations could take half the time that they currently do if people presented in better shape.
And isn't that true that some people actually have to lose weight sometimes before they're allowed to go and have a procedure?
Absolutely. And that's part of the reason why.
Right.
But also there's a lot of pressure and that extra weight means blood pressure is high as well. There's other, a lot of contraindications for an operation to take place. And the longer somebody's under anesthetic, by the way, the higher the risk. So the idea would be minimize the time you're under anesthetic, minimize the problems that the surgeon has getting to the area that they need to work on to do what they need to do. And chances are that condition in itself may have been causal to the situation that you need the operation for in the first place.
I feel like we're having a big reality check on in terms of health. I know there will be some people listening thinking, oh goodness, you know, there's a few things I need to change. But, you know, I love empowered languaging. I try not to say need. So if you're ready, if you are listening and you feel ready to change, you know, something in your life, make a little note to yourself and then maybe tell a friend so you've got some accountability, whether it be one of the three legs of the stool that Tim talked about. Maybe it's your rest or maybe it's your nutrition. Maybe it's your muscles, something you haven't really thought about. And the other one we're going to move on to is your posture. Because Tim, another thing that you say is you talk about how people can avoid getting shorter as they age. Now, this is one that's close to my heart. I am at the moment the shortest member of my family. My 13-year-old just surpassed me. I'm 5'3½". Don't forget the half. How do I make sure that I don't get shorter as I age?
Well, it's a problem, and I'm exactly the same. I'm trying to keep up. I'm 6 foot tall, always have been, and my 14.
Well, I don't think you've always been 6 foot tall. Let's be honest.
Well, maybe close. but my 14-year-old granddaughter is becoming taller than me, and that's just not on. That just cannot happen. But I don't know how to make myself any taller than I already am. But listen, height loss as we age is a twofold thing. We know scientifically that as we age, the volume of the intravertebral disc material reduces. And so there is some spinal compression that goes on in there. And long term, you know, we can do a lot to improve the health of the intravertebral disc space and the tissues in there. But essentially, if you think of your skeleton and you took everything away and you were just a skeleton, the only thing that holds the skeleton and allows the skeleton to move in the angles that it is supposed to move is muscle. Muscle, tendons, and ligaments, all that soft tissue combines to hold you in the position that you're able to be functional. Otherwise, you'd collapse in a pile of bones on the floor. And so skeletal muscle is very important. Now, there's two elements of what I'd like to touch on this. The second one is addressing the issue of bone loss or osteoporosis.
Mm.
Let's look at the postural height, first of all. If you start losing muscle mass and your daily profile of activity is more based around being seated than it is standing. So, for example, you get people who might be a tradie, a builder, a plumber, or a bricklayer, people like that. They tend to be very, very physically active. A roofer is up and down ladders all day. They're very physically active. They probably don't have to worry about the amount of the day when they get to sit down. In fact, they'll probably find they'll get to sit down for half an hour or an hour every day, and it's a huge relief to them. There are other people who sit down all day, and maybe they get up for half an hour to do some exercise or activity. Sitting is tremendously destructive if that's all you're doing. And we are doing more and more of that. We're sitting behind our desks. We're sitting at the dining room table. We're sitting up in bed watching television. We're sitting in a bus. We're sitting in our cars. We're sitting around the boardroom or the conference room. We're sitting face-to-face having Zoom meetings. I mean, how many people are doing their Zoom meetings standing up at a standing desk? I have to say, and I'm pleased to say, more and more people as they start to realize there's some benefits to doing that. So maintaining postural height is very, very important. But the postural muscles aren't muscles we traditionally do a lot of work with. And even someone who is a runner or a cyclist particularly tend to find that after a period of time, muscles that attach on the front of the thigh go through the pelvis and attach on the lower back. The psoas muscles, the hip flexor muscles, become shorter. As they become shorter, you end up, when you do stand up, you end up with a hunched, stooped posture in the lower part of your body, simply because those muscles have become tight. And they've only become tight and short because we're not using them. We're not flexing them. We're not stretching them and testing their range of motion. The other main postural muscles that we have are in the back, the lower mid and upper back, the trapezius and the back of the shoulders. But also if we tend to be hunched over the desk all the day or in the seated position, our pectoral muscles, our chest muscles get tighter and shorter. And so the ability for our shoulders to expand back and our chest to pop up and to stand in good postural positioning is reduced as well. A good test to test your posture is to back up against the wall, put your heels against the wall, calves against the wall, buttocks, shoulders, and the back of your head against the wall, and then step away from the wall holding that position. That is actually your correct postural position. I got to tell you, that feels weird. That feels strange. People think, I'm not going to walk around the office looking like that all day.
Well, okay, for those people that are listening, by the way, if you've just joined us, you are listening to the Up Your Brave show. Natalie Cutler-Welsh here, and I'm talking today to Tim Bean on the topic of the truth about health, weight, heart, muscles, and more. And for those of you that have been listening for a while, I would love to challenge you to try the stand up against the wall test, we're going to call it. So you've got your heels, your calves, your butt, your back, and your head touching the wall. And as Tim says, that is your natural and ideal postural state so that you can avoid height loss. Give it a try. Let us know how it feels. 2057 on the text, email at realitycheck.radio on the email. Sorry, Tim, what were you saying?
Well, that's fine. The other thing that occurs test-wise, it just burst into mind then, is a short time ago, a study was released where it was in the States, and they were testing a number of school children, quite a large cohort of school children. What they did is they got them to sit on a bench. So the bench wasn't particularly hot, like a high chair. It was a bench that was maybe a foot 12, 14 inches above the ground. Children were asked to sit on the bench and then without using their hands for support, in other words, they weren't allowed to push off the bench, push off their knees, they asked them to stand up. Just stand up off the bench. Over 50% could not. 50% were so weak in their structural postural drive muscles, in other words, the quadriceps, calves, glutes, hamstrings, lower back, that they couldn't stand up unassisted. And what we've seen is when we're doing fitness testing with people who first come in new to activity or have been away from activity for some time, we're finding exactly the same thing. People are unable to step up a step height that's a foot high. They're unable to sit up off a height that's a foot high. And I think that's a major loss of function. If you think back, it wasn't that long ago we spent a lot of time not sitting in chairs but squatting. And if you look at some cultures, they still do. And they have that ability. They have fantastic hip mobility, great back strength. They don't have hip replacement, the incidence of hip replacements that we do here in the West, knee replacements, problems with their ankles and problems with their lower backs, by keeping these muscles mobile and keeping them strong.
So stand and squat where possible?
Yep, stand and squat.
Hey, you just reminded me of something, Tim. So I do a lot of sitting. I'm interviewing people. I'm coaching people. I'm leading my online coaching programs. Everything's sitting. I do have a standing desk. I don't use it that often. But many of my listeners know that because part of my vision in 2024 for myself was connecting with people more in real life, I took a role at my local community center and I work with the elderly. And when I do that two mornings a week, okay, first of all, it totally fills my cup. It fills my heart. It's amazing. And I'm on my feet. I am literally standing. I'm the bingo lady. I'm the morning tea lady. I'm like connecting people, introducing them, like having fun, just being a goof. And the other day we did chair exercises and one of the women was leading it. Normally we have a video. The technology didn't work. She used to be a fitness instructor. It was the most beautiful thing. We got everyone in a circle instead of in rows like we normally do. Everyone's in a circle. This woman who's, I don't know, 70 something is leading the chair exercises. And one of the ones she has, and I had my Yui Boom with the music. And so like, it was fun. I did music from like the 50s and the 60s. Anyway, and at one point she said to everyone, now I'm going to show you how to get out of the chair. Like you're not allowed to use some of the chairs have arms. She's like, you can't use the arms. I want you to put your hands like this. And so she's got her fingers kind of intertwined and the elbows are out at the side. And she got them to do that. And the second time she had their arms out straight, like they were holding a pole or rod, you know, in front of them. And yeah, you're right. About more than half of them were able to do it, but some of them just couldn't. They were just sitting there. They couldn't stand up. And then she also taught them how to sit down safely while using their core and their muscles and their legs. So it is something that we don't think about it. We just like push off the chair and we get up. So should we do this as a practice? Actually practice sitting up out of a chair, however old you are or are not, without pushing on the arms, like use your actual body to get out of the chair. Yes?
That would be definitely a start. That would be a great start. And then translate that into other exercises like performing squats, deadlifts, walking lunges, those types of activities where those muscles then start to be engaged, but you're putting extra loading on the muscles, not just mm-hmm. your own body weight, but you're excessively loading them. And that progressive resistance is what switches the muscle just from being maybe catabolic if you're not working, but even just nominally active, but it switches into becoming anabolic. In other words, you start pushing the muscle into growth mode. Now, when you push your muscle into growth mode, some fascinating things happen. One of them is it stimulates the body to produce more DHEA, dehydroepiandrosterone, and human growth hormone. And as a result of extra human growth hormone and DHEA, you produce more testosterone, which is your muscle building hormone. That gives you, that opens the gateway, opens the door, and the capacity for your muscle to actually grow is the stimulus. Now, we might have some time at the end to talk about it, but then if you're doing that, you need to support that with adequate amount of protein to maintain that growth and maintain muscle mass. But again, if I could switch back part of that also, the skeletal muscle attaches at either end to a bone. And so when you're doing that, you're not just strengthening muscle, but you're strengthening bone as well. And it's that lateral pressure, that flexion pressure that comes from muscle action that we don't normally get when we're walking, particularly not when we're swimming, which is a buoyancy exercise. But walking, swimming, sometimes cycling, particularly if you've got an e-bike where you're not working as hard as you may be on an e-bike, you're not exerting those forces on the bones as you should. And it can be a case where you may continue to lose bone mass and bone strength, even though you're doing activity. And you might even be losing some muscle mass because you're doing excessive amounts of that activity and the body is running out of fuel and breaking into muscle mass for fuel, breaking that protein down. But muscles and bones are only as strong as the current forces exerted on them. And that's part of the process of regeneration. It's also part of the process of strengthening the body. You know, I mean, your body doesn't store fitness. You can't say, well, I did that when I was 20 or I did it when I was 30 and I'm going to be fine. No, this is every day is a new day, as I know with diet. Every day is a new day, and you have to regard that as what am I going to do today to maintain strength, to maintain that growth phase as I get older? Because as you get older and muscle atrophy becomes a real thing, you have to work harder just to maintain it, just to maintain that physical ability. Because when you put stress on the muscle, on the attachments of the muscle where the muscle turns to a tendon and attaches the bone, you put stress on the bone. And that stress on the bone matrix stimulates it to grow and to stay strong. And, you know, the long bones of the body is when we produce all sorts of essential elements for our body to work with, red blood cells and so forth. But if we lose our muscle strength, we also lose the structural strength of our bones. And osteoporosis is a frightening disease, and it's an insidious disease because largely it's invisible. Many people will not feel ill or unwell or feel any symptomatic problems from a loss of bone loss until the day they break a bone.
Right.
And then it becomes a problem. And it could be just, getting out of a car and they bang their shin. It could be on a ski field at the other extreme. It could be anything. There's been cases where, there's one case, I think it was a 60-year-old woman who sneezed and cracked 2 vertebrae in the back. That's the amount of bone loss that was there. Now, the great thing is, if you can engage in a strength building activity like weightlifting in the gym and it's done correctly, in other words, it's set at the right level, the right exercises, and it's done under proper supervision. We've seen evidence where people have not only stopped, I say stopped, the process of osteoporosis, but actually reversed it. And in this particular case, which was done by Dr. Bonner, I think at the Cooper Clinic in the USA, this particular subject gained 3% of bone mass over a 12-month period, which was unheard of. And yet people who have been lifting weights have been doing this for a long, long time and have continued to do this for a long, long time. Now, having said that, when you're stressing bone and when you're stressing muscle, the body does regard that kind of as an injury thing, as part of our regenerative cellular regeneration process. You have to put the raw materials into the body to provide the materials from which the bone and muscle will grow and maintain themselves. If you don't, you're just putting stress on these structures and wearing them down. It's like a building site. You know, if you've got builders there, you've got things going on, you need to supply the raw materials, the bricks, the mortar, the timber, the nails. Everything needs to go in there in order to allow building to happen. And so that's where diet becomes a very important thing. And people often say to us, well, what's more important, is the exercise or the diet? And even go back to this diversity, equity, and inclusion thing.
Yeah.
I would say
we're going to take those buzzwords and we're going to throw them back. Yeah.
It's not one before the other in terms of importance. But where I would start would be with the activity, with the strength training. And our mantra is build before you burn. In other words, get your joints and muscles stronger before you start doing high volume cardio work to get fitter and burn fat more effectively. But I would start with the weights exercises, get your body stronger, get your metabolism set up, get your hormones working, get your lymphatic system working again, because your lymph system doesn't have a heartbeat to pump lymph around the body. It uses muscle action to do that. Your digestive system, the peristaltic movement, uses muscle action to make sure everything's working on there. Start there and then build a nutrition profile that supports what you're doing with your activity. Now, you can't have one without the other. And all the exercise in the world won't mitigate a bad diet, and vice versa. But if you think of it in that order, start with the exercise, start with movement, because that's what we're lacking as a race. That is our undoing. That is why we are dying early. And because we're, you know, the prevention of frailty with aging is a key issue. And all the things that go with it are going to be important to address. And if you think the muscle loss is a graphic example. I don't know if you've ever had maybe a child, or you've had it yourself, or someone you know who's broken an arm, for example, or broken a leg, and they've had their leg in plaster or their arm in plaster for 6 or 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. What happens, or what do you notice when the plaster cast comes off?
Their
huge
leg is
amount of
shrunk.
Muscle loss.
Yeah.
So that's what's happened. That's atrophy. That's what happens when you don't use your muscle. Can it be brought back again? Yes, it can. You can go through an exercise program, start rebuilding muscle again. When astronauts were first put into space, they experienced exactly the same muscle and bone wastage. Bone wastage particularly, but definitely muscle wastage, because in a zero gravity environment, there was no resistance that they were putting on the body. There was nothing distressing. And they had cycles in space, in the space station, so they could do stationary cycling. And that did not make any difference to the bone and muscle loss. And it wasn't until they started putting resistance regime and resistance exercises into their routines that they started to reverse this and were able to maintain and recover and rebuild their muscle and bone condition.
You made me think of something. I know it's so common to talk about weight gain, but I had a family friend recently who I saw, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I said, you're looking very, this is what I literally said, because I'm such a truth teller. I said, you're looking very vegan. And she's like, what do you mean? I said, you shrunk. And she goes, yeah, my kids are calling me the incredible shrinking woman. I don't know why. I'm just, you know, I'm doing the same exercise and everything. And so I encouraged her to have an appointment with one of my friends who is kind of a holistic health practitioner. And she did. And she said, yeah, the thing is, you're doing the usual, probably a lot more exercise than the average person, definitely, but you're not eating enough. She said, you don't have the reserves. She's like, but I feel fine. I feel energetic. Not a problem. She said, yes, but if something happened, you know, like you said, you know, if you break your leg or just even a big stress in your life, you just have no reserve. She said, and she was, I think her husband had recently literally gone vegan. So she had kind of felt bad about eating meat when he was around kind of thing. There's a bit of that going on. And my friend said to her, you know, if you don't eat the meat, then your body will eat the meat, you know, basically going, your muscles will shrink. And it was like, it was quite confronting, but I think she suddenly realized, you know, because when you're with yourself all the time, you don't notice as much. Mm-hmm. She hadn't noticed how much she lost, how much weight she lost. And then I come along, the truth teller, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you're shrinking. But so is that a thing, you know, that sometimes it's not talked about, the issue of people going, I don't know why I'm losing weight.
Exactly. And it's a mystery to people. And I think the one key thing that people say, well, nutrition, what's your best advice for nutrition? I would say eat more protein.
Mm.
Eat more protein. And that is a difficulty that meat eaters don't have. It's a difficulty that vegetarians and vegans do struggle with, even pescatarians who tend to eat, you know, if they're going to eat meat products, it's going to be fish. Because a lot of the protein that you will seek and source is going to come from your legumes and starchy carbs and those sorts of food items that also come hand in hand and bundled with a high calorie or a dense calorie carbohydrate component to that food. So in order to eat enough protein, you have to eat probably an excessive amount of starchy carbs and therefore an excessive amount of calories. Any surplus calories that you eat, and particularly starchy carbs, once they go through, particularly if it's well cooked, it's not going to take a lot of time to transit through the gut into the bloodstream. And those calories then can elevate blood sugars, that'll trigger an insulin response, which triggers a fat storage response. So it's a much greater challenge to stay leaner if you're a vegetarian, and it's a much greater challenge to get enough protein to keep your muscle mass adequately fueled to maintain itself. And again, it's not just about muscle. It's about the effect that has on how you move, your agility, your ability to climb stairs, get in and out of a bath, get in and out of stairs, carry in and out of a chair, carry your groceries from the car, carry a child on the side of your arm. Mm. All these sorts of issues are strength related. And when you start losing the ability for muscle to recover because you're not putting the raw materials in, then that's where you really have to approach vegetarianism and veganism at a scientific level. And I encourage people who are looking at that option as a lifestyle choice to really abandon the idea that vegetarian and veganism is simply the absence of eating meat and animal products.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to think of is it's a science of getting adequate nutrition from other sources. And you have to be very learned and very dedicated to get that right. And too many people don't, and their physiques suffer from it as they age.
Absolutely. And hey, if our listeners do know any amazing sites or specific people that are amazing at helping with that, Tim, I don't know if you know anyone specific, but I agree. I think if you're going to do it, and I did it for 15 years, I was a vegetarian, all good from high school until babies. And it was fine for me for then, but I think you do want to do it. If you're going to do it right. If you're going to do it right. All right, Tim, I think you've really highlighted a lot of health things for people. Some of this, everyone, I imagine, will be a reminder to you, things you already knew. But I'm hoping, and I imagine there will be some new things that have come in, some things you might not have thought about as well. Tim, before we go into the Up Your Brave question, I wanted to ask you, have you noticed in your gym or in the work that you do, people struggling with the COVID or the jab aftermath? And you know, anything that they can do to support themselves through that?
Yes, it's kind of got worse and it's got better since we last spoke, in that for some people who received multiple jabs, their conditions have got worse, and other conditions have manifested themselves that maybe they didn't have before or have anticipated before. Having said that, we're seeing a great many more people coming in who have been down that road, mainly because they were coerced to do so, not mm-hmm. because it was their free choice, and are very concerned about how to mitigate the damage that that may have caused or the potential for further injury or damage that may occur. And so we're helping them with as many protocols as we can, but the exercise thing is a key part of that. there is a challenge because we've got to be careful. Again, why we're big on the strength training is it's a very structural and a fundamental exercise, and it's not like we're asking people to run a marathon. And you'll be aware of the number, huge number of sports people, particularly competitive, high-level athlete sports people, are dropping dead from myocarditis and heart attacks and those sort of events as a result of this. So we've got to be very careful about the level at which we bring people back into exercise and how we challenge their bodies and their body systems to start, you know, developing and coming right. And there's lots of other protocols that people are looking at in terms of, you know, taking, you know, methylene blue and nicotine patches and so forth to try and quell the spike protein, etc. But we are seeing this journey is not over for a lot of people by a long shot. But more and more people are certainly waking up to the idea that this was wrong, this was dangerous, this was false. One particular, when we have quite a few people from, we're quite close to the local hospital, so quite a few of our members are members of the, what was the DHB, who come in, and more than a few of them have articulated things that they have seen on the wards, but also personal experience. I mean, one woman's husband, immediately after having the shot, had a tremendous heart, not tremendous, but a tragic heart event, and is now functioning at only 20% of his heart capacity.
Mm.
And that's kind of destroyed their lives, you know. And it wasn't because he wanted to. It's because she worked in that organization, and they were told that if you are living in the same house as somebody who hasn't had it, they need to get it. And to the point where, you know, people were living in their garages, away from their family, and so absolutely outrageous behavior that was forced upon us. Particularly when now we know, as we, many of us knew right from the start, just because there was not evidence to the contrary, that the whole pandemic, if I can call it that, was not a pandemic. It was basically a fraud of numbers. And what we're seeing as a result of that is backing everything up. Now, people say to me, oh, no, look at you. You've gone all far right. You're a far right person. And I have to say, yes, I am. I am far right in that so far we've been right about everything. And I think, you know, the more that comes out, the more people are waking up, thankfully, who are able to say, no, hang on, this wasn't right. We need to do this. But it means that the awareness is such that it is less likely that this sort of thing will happen again.
I would like to think so. And I also think now that more people are realizing things, if they can at least now ask for help and ask questions without feeling like that they're not allowed to, and that they'll be shamed if they even do question things. So that's a kind of a positive. And there definitely are some things that people can do to support themselves and get their health back on track. But the important thing is to talk about the truth about health, which is what we've touched on today. Thank you so much for all your wisdom you've shared, Tim. I'd love to ask you, what would you like to do to up your brave for the remainder of 2024?
Well, the sad thing that's come out of all this, Natalie, is that this is now, it's not the first, but well, certainly the second generation where we're seeing parents outliving their children. And that's not right. I would like to see myself over the next 12 months pushing harder and stronger to getting the youth that were subject to this whole regime, getting their health back in track, and trying to reorganize their physiological structures that have been disrupted so badly. Some of them won't be symptomatic, but you know, we talk to people in the medical profession, particularly midwives, who are saying the amount of the number of miscarriages is off the charts, infertility is off the charts, premature babies is never seen at such record, and being born with deformities. So there are a lot of young people who are looking at these things, because these are real conversations that aren't happening officially, but are happening in our communities. People know what is going on, and children who are becoming adolescents who are looking to the future are thinking, maybe I don't want to have children. What are the risks? What are the risks involved? You know, as a woman, the number of women who are dying during childbirth is accelerated. And this is adding to the mental health problems that we're having with our youth as well. They're just so nervous about the future. Is there even a future? You know, and what is the future like in terms of being able to live a healthy, active, long lifestyle? Is that even there? So back to your question, in terms of, I mean, I think I would like to see myself deeper into that space, and being more visible with that message to that group, to say, hey, listen, there's lots you can do. We can help with that. Mm-hmm. And if we can do that and put people's minds at ease that there is a solution and there's a pathway forward, I think that will help tremendously, because I think the mental health catastrophe that is building and the number of young people contemplating suicide because they don't see a way out or a better way forward is absolutely awful.
That's right. And I think that's right. We want to help them see the path forward and there is a better way. You're a grandfather, right? Of how many?
We have 8 grandchildren.
Oh my goodness.
And that's a lot of, that's a very expensive Christmas, but it's fun. I've never had more fun in my life. It's absolutely fantastic. Every day we spend with our grandchildren is absolutely fantastic. The oldest boy, he's up in Auckland. I think he's in his like second year apprenticeship. And the youngest, she's just 3. So quite a wide spread there, but yeah, a lot of fun. I'm loving life. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And we want to make sure it's an amazing life for them. What is coming up for you in the next 6 months or so? And how can people connect with you online?
Well, as I said, things are busy and the club tent has taken over our lives in terms of the center of attention. It's become a great hub for our ability to assist and apply our knowledge to help people. The club is growing, so membership is growing. We're getting a lot more young people in. We're getting, at the other end of the spectrum, quite a lot more senior people coming in.
Good.
Again, addressing the issues that we've just discussed today. And to the point where we're ordering more equipment all the time. I think we've got 2 more shipments coming in the next 2 or 3 months and expanding the club out in terms of the choice of equipment and the options that we've got there. So that's really rocking ahead.
That's end rocking in Timaru, is that right? Rocking in Timaru.
Timaru is rocking when it comes to that side of things. Absolutely. We also have coming up a lecture tour at the end of September where we'll be away overseas. There's a private corporate clients that I have in Madrid and in London that I'll be doing some work with. And there's also, while we're there, we're investigating and signed up to at least 2, but there's maybe more medical and fitness-based conferences. The big IDEA convention is going to be on as well in the States, so we're looking at that too. Just to keep our knowledge up to speed, to be engaged with the industry, see what's going on, talk to the people who are sort of the industry leaders and the thought leaders there to see what direction things are going in and how we can keep up and contribute to that. But also with the corporate side of things, again, helping people at the hard edge of business, at the high performers, the key people who are the most likely to burn out. But if they do, a business and a community has the most to lose. Mm-hmm. How we can keep those in shape and support and help them best as well. So that's going to be a busy time. And I think from August, I think our schedule's opening up a little bit as well in terms of working with people here in New Zealand.
Nice.
So businesses that we're working with and individuals as well, because not many people know that we do a very select few individual programs to help people one-on-one, hands-on, and be very effective in that regard.
Well, how can people reach out to you if they did want help in terms of the executive fitness health coaching, or maybe they want to have you on their podcast or interview you? Where can they find you?
2 ways I'd suggest, but our main one is LinkedIn. LinkedIn is where all our corporate contacts connect with us and we communicate with them. And there's, it's a very able platform. And it means also that people who connect with us can see who we're connected with. And that's all part of that networking community, which works very well. And so look for me on LinkedIn, Tim Bean or Timothy J. Bean, I think my profile is. And the other one is probably if people do feel they want to reach out privately and personally, drop me an email. And the email address is the word physique, PHYSIQUE at IOPM. That's India Oscar Papa Mike, as in Institute of Physique Management, IOPM. .co.uk.
Okay.
Rather different there. We've kept our UK email address just because we have so many people connected with that. It just made sense to maintain that. So physique@iopm.co.uk. And you'll get there and we can get back to you if you have a specific sort of inquiry that you want to deal with personally.
Amazing. I will endeavor to put those links on the replay page as we do. But if people want to look Tim up on LinkedIn or send through an email, and if you can't remember, then just send us a text, 2057, or email inbox at realitycheck.radio, and we will hook you up. Is there anything else you want to share with us, Tim, before we wrap things up?
Only one thing, and that is this. I would say start now. Start now, whatever age you are, start now. It's never too late to start. I mean, our oldest client that joined the gym was 97 years of age, young Eric. I think we spoke about him last time. And our youngest, I would encourage people to start thinking about getting exercise, start paying attention to nutrition, even as an adolescent, even as a teenager, 12, 13, 14 years of age. Start helping your children become aware and educated about nutrition and about exercises. Encourage them to read the labels on these energy drinks that they drink so much of and see the danger behind, all the caffeine, aspartame, all those sorts of things that are in those drinks that are doing them harm, destroying their bone tissue and those sorts of things. Start creating a culture in your family and conversations in your family around good health, robust health, natural health, and longevity, and give people a vision for the future where they have a capacity and they have hope and they have the opportunities to be in great shape to enable them to achieve anything they want to do and want to be in life. And that's what I'd love to leave you with today.
Thank you so much, Tim. That is such a good reminder, everybody. Start now. So we've been talking to Tim Bean today about the truth about health. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.